Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyse the lies and deceptions of history.
Hi there, Brent and Mike. It's nice to have you guys back today. And today's show is going to centre around Africa and blacks. But I think black societies and black countries is a good topic. For the audience, Mike is actually a guy who's done quite a lot of traveling into the third world. And recently he's been to Africa and he's traveled especially through West Africa. And he's seen a bunch of stuff. And I think whites need to learn a lot of stuff about Africa. So, Mike, how was your trip? And tell us about the first thing that that you went and did, and what were your impressions?
Hi, Jan and Brant. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this. Thank you. So I've returned, and it was amazing. I'm really glad that I saw some of these places and things that I had not been before. I think what I'd like to do is to tell a story of something I experienced, which I think has broader implications, if that's all right with you.
Go for it.
So this is about Nigeria. This took place in Nigeria when I was there. I was taking a taxi that needed to go through a legitimate toll. And I say legitimate toll, meaning an established toll, not a makeshift side of the road, we want some money toll. So the taxi driver, who was obligated to pay it, because it was supposed to be, the drivers are supposed to pay, not the passengers, in this particular case, didn't have any cash. And he drove up to the toll booth and he pulled out a debit card to pay. And I'm going to say the equivalent of this toll in US dollars would have been 20 cents, 25 cents, something like that. I don't remember exactly, but it was a very small amount of money. So the toll booth collector said, no, we don't have the terminal. It's down today. It's been broken. So the POS terminal, or the, you know, something to pay with a card. So the guy started getting upset, saying, well, I don't have any cash. You have to take, you know, my card. So that they started arguing with each other. And he got to the point where he said, the president said we're going cashless. You have to take my card. If you don't have a way to take my card, then I'm just going to go through. So he started creeping his car through slowly, which, if you've ever been to Africa, you understand that one way to when somebody doesn't want to do something or wants to go through something, they sort of creep forward until somebody gives up and lets go. So this was kind of a typical way of handling this. So he started creeping through, like at a half a mile an hour or something like that, just barely moving the car to get, you know, to see, to test the waters and see if he could get through without paying. So the toll collector jumped out of his booth and started raising his voice at the guy, saying, you can't go through this. You have to pay. The terminal is down. You need to pay cash. And so the guy starts yelling out the window, but the president said, we're going cashless. So how are we supposed to go cashless if you don't have a way to take a card? And this, then it just turned into a just yelling match with each other. So maybe a minute of yelling went by. The car was fully out of the booth. The guy was two car lengths. The toll collector had walked two car lengths ahead to be beside the taxi driver. And I'm in the back. And then a soldier walked over, or a military or a police, whatever. It's hard to, you know, there's no difference, right? So it's just a guy with a semi-automatic rifle. So he walked over and started, not so verbal, but he'd say a few words, say, look, you have to pay, right? And I'm just sitting in the back just watching all this and just kind of having a laugh. But I'm also watching, you know, does the guy raise up the rifle? Does he have his finger on the trigger or straight ahead? Luckily for everybody, he had his finger straight ahead. He was trained properly on how to hold a how to hold a rifle. You don't, walk around with your finger on the trigger. You don't put your finger on the trigger. If you've trained in weapons, you don't put your finger on a trigger unless you want to kill somebody. So he didn't have his finger on the trigger. And I'm a little nervous, but I'm also kind of having a laugh in my own head at this scene, which, if you follow where I'm going with this, this is about so many themes. This is about outside, idiocy coming from some bankers saying that they have to go cashless and their leaders following it. And then, the people being aware of it and the guy not having cash, on and on and on. So then another motorist had paid his toll, two toll booths over, pulled his car to the side of the road and came walking over yelling, "This is not Nigeria. You are showing this guy an impression of Nigeria, which is not what we are." And he was very nice. He came up to everybody. He got right in their faces. He said, "You have to pay the toll," to the driver. He said to the police, "Calm down, stay back." And he said to the toll driver, "Hold on, he has to pay the toll." Like he just walked up like he's going to fix the situation. And he looked at me and he said, "I am very sorry. This is not Nigeria. We are not like this." So I let it go on for another couple minutes. And I realized, I knew early on what the result was going to be, that I would pay the toll. So I let it go on. It was just yelling and arguing. And the guy, including the new motorist that pulled over, was now starting to argue with them. And I just said, "Okay, my entertainment is over for today." I pulled out some cash. I handed it to the taxi driver. I said, "Don't worry, take it as your tip. Here, pay the toll." And so he paid the toll in cash, and then everybody went back their way. So that story, to me, touches enough themes in every regard that's instead of, telling you some dry, "How's Africa?" I just tell you that story. How do you like that?
That's very interesting. Very interesting. Many comments there. Brent, do you have any thoughts?
Well, the only time that I was in Africa was when I was in Egypt. So I wasn't in sub-Saharan Africa. So I would ask Mike, is that indicative of the rest of the time that you spent down there?
That seemed to be indicative of Nigeria for sure. Everything is a problem. everything is little conflicts everywhere. They have huge money problems. Their money, the stock of their cash, they've been destroying it faster than the people are taking up the debit card or whatever that system is. That they're trying to have everybody use. So they're destroying so the cash is simultaneously worthless and hard to get. And I fortunately bought some cash before I left. And I bought cash along the way to make sure, because the ATMs, or at least the ATMs I could find, 90% of them won't accept a foreign card. And the ones that will, the limit per withdrawal was the equivalent of about 13 US dollars. So I found one that let me take out three times the equivalent of $13. I found another one time that let me take it out twice and then sent a message said my card is banned for doing it twice. So it's just, I want to use the word disaster, but it's just like things that don't work everywhere, conflict everywhere, and layers of systems that are from different places and different peoples and different types of thinking that are layered upon their society, which sometimes don't really work. But I, in general, with a gradient, I would say yes, that's kind of something that if I told you it was another sub-Saharan African country, that story, you might have said, if somebody had been there and said, "Yeah, that sounds like it could have happened in some other places." But the reason I liked that story was because of this ridiculous idea that they're going to get everybody to go cashless.
Yeah, I think the key thing that you said there, Mike, is that there are these systems that are layered upon their society. These are not systems that they have developed from their own culture over time. And when I hear any stories like this, or you know, the stories that, that Jan talks about, both Rhodesia and South Africa, I can't help but think that this is a continual mismatch, and it's fake from the point of view of, you know, everyone's the same, there's equality everywhere, we should embrace egalitarianism. And if there's anywhere on the planet where a society is not functioning to the, you know, to white standards, it's due to racisms or something else. It's always, you're always, the finger is always pointed at someplace else. It's always a red herring. It's always a misdirection. And the core concepts of why things don't work well, say, for example, in Nigeria, as they would in the Netherlands or the US or Canada or someplace, is because it's not populated and built and run by Western kind, by white people. And one of the things that I try to talk about with students is that, look, it's okay that everyone is not the same. Just quit pretending that everyone is the same and that they should be the same. And then all of these mismatches, these incongruities, these little small disasters that we see, they'll start to make sense. But it seems like there's no honesty, first of all, to address these issues. I don't know how feel about that.
Wow, that's very insightful there, Brent. You raise a bunch of deep stuff. That point that you make about there's no honesty, now you're starting to get into, you know, going even further down the African rabbit hole, because everything, you know, I cannot stress enough that the way that we think as European people, we have our own culture and our own values. You know, interestingly enough, years ago, I worked for an Englishman here in South Africa. And later, he and I became a bit friends after hours. And one day, I was trying to talk to this Englishman about race. So this Englishman turns around and he says to me, but, you know, what is our culture? What is our culture? Like we don't have a culture. Fricking everything in the Western world, that the way that we function, that is our culture. And we don't even recognize or realize the many of the values that we have. And then when you go and you look at these other people and you start looking at how they behave, they are completely different. Things like the truth, just a simple concept like the truth or honesty, those things do not work the same way as in the Western world. And our emphasis on something like the truth and accuracy, those concepts do not even exist in among the blacks. And when I look at blacks and Jews, there are some things that are similar there, because for them, when they speak, that the way they speak can be more for the audience than to do with reality. Whereas you can talk to any white person, and white people are always looking at, is what is coming out of my mouth congruent with reality? And that is a deep thing. All whites are like that. But these other people, they play with words. Words have no meaning. And the more I look at Jews and blacks, the more I say to myself, words are going to have no meaning whatsoever. So that's just one topic. Enough of a rant. What else? Anything else you want to say, Brent? Because you're diving into some deep stuff.
Well, I think that you're also making a valid point with this genetic predisposition that whites have to tell the truth and to be accurate. I know for myself, it's like I don't have a choice to do otherwise. I'm genetically programmed to tell the truth, to be accurate, to be precise in my language, to be fair. I have an extremely strong innate sense of fairness, and when I see someone who's not being fair or a government that's not being fair, I get very irate. I get very angry at that. And also, I know that white people are not nearly as tribal as any other race on the planet. So we don't necessarily use our words for our own advantage. We use our words to convey information appropriately and accurately. And this is what I'm about to say here is a little bit off the topic. We could talk about it a different time. But I think that we have to have some new vocabulary to express concepts that they're very important to us now. Like the term anti-white was not bandied around very much, but through people in the community that I'm associated with kept pushing the term anti-white, anti-white, anti-whiteism to express these realities that we're living in. And then slowly that's being adopted. And there's a few other terms as well. And I know that I'll probably be saying those terms without even thinking about it as we're going through this. Like, I'll try to say white people sometimes because that's what people are used to. But my default term is Western kind. I call white people Western kind because we built Western civilization. And to me, that's an appropriate term for our people because that recognizes what we've done. And the other people that are inside of our civilization, they're in our civilization as guests. They don't control it. They didn't build it. And they're not the same as us. Doesn't mean that they're bad, but they're just not the same. So I think that whites are naive. Whites have always tried to play fair when others were not playing fair. So we've been taken advantage of. Our countries have been turned over to people that hate us. It's pretty obvious. But somewhere along the line, we have to develop a new vocabulary to start handling these concepts that we're dealing with.
Yeah, Brent, definitely education of whites is a huge issue. I was even looking at some stuff about Hitler in his early days, even before he became the chancellor. And I came across some interesting discussions where Hitler was saying to other people that he would need about 30 years to fix the Germans. And people need to have a whole change of mentality. If I may just add in some things regarding that story of yours, Mike, that story about Nigeria going cashless. In Africa, there are things there's so many things that you hear people talking, but those words that are said do not actually have the same meaning to the people who live here. I'll give you an example. I've got a neighbor who comes from Bulgaria, and she's lived in South Africa since the 1990s. And she wanted to just get the fuck away from Bulgaria because it was communist and she didn't care. And the moment they were allowed to get out, she got the hell out of Bulgaria. She just came to Africa. She didn't even know exactly where she was going. And she ended up in South Africa by accident, literally. But it was not a bad option for her. And she likes it here. And she was so happy to be away from communism and all that stuff that she loves wheeling and dealing and doing business and stuff. And so forth. But nowadays, after I've spoken to her many times, nowadays she's also starting to become very used to South Africa. And one day I was asking her something about, because we've had power outages and then we had water outages. So the one day suddenly the water was off. So I contacted her and I said to her, I see the water is off. What do we know about the situation? When's it going to be fixed? And then she was saying, well, they said they're going to fix it, by later today. But, it's probably just a bunch of bullshit. And so then I said to her, well, so finally, you've become a real South African. You don't trust anybody anymore. And you don't believe anything that anybody says. And she said, yeah, that's exactly how she is. So I said, well, you're a real South African now. And she laughed and she said, yeah, she thinks she is. And so one of the things, for example, about leaders in Africa, leaders in Africa, there's a guy called Peter Zeihan, who was watching, he's a geopolitical guy in America, and he was watching the BRICS stuff here in South Africa. And then he summed up BRICS by saying that imagine that you've got a bunch of three-year-olds, and the three-year-olds are sitting and they're pretending that they are saying things that are of like earth-shattering importance. And he said, if you can think in those terms, then that's a description of this week of BRICS talks in South Africa. So one of the things that happens in Africa a lot is that all these black leaders, they talk like they're busy planning a rocket mission to Mars and Jupiter. South Africa's leaders are the best at this. They will talk like they're busy building Star Trek spaceship and they're going to go to another universe in 2 years' time, etc. And they'll talk big talk. Meanwhile, they can't even keep the lights on, the water isn't working, the police don't catch anybody, and nobody cares. So when these blacks make pronouncements, many times the blacks themselves, common blacks, won't even believe that shit. They won't even believe it. And it could even be that possibly that people were, I also think that your sense, your particular sense, that this guy was arguing and arguing about not having cash so that eventually you will solve the problem. That was something I wanted to ask you was because you're an American in Africa, I've often heard that Americans and foreigners are taken advantage of because they see you people as rich and they'll come up with all kinds of bullshit just to get money out of you.
I think that occurred to me after I paid the toll. And I thought, you know, maybe the guy legitimately didn't have any cash with him, but maybe he did. Maybe he had some hiding somewhere. I don't know. But at the end of the day, you know, I paid it. So it did occur to me that was possible. And you know, just saying something in response to Brent, I looked at myself as a guest in that country and in other countries that I have visited where I'm, you know, distinctly different from the people that, you know, it's their country. And I respect their ways, whatever I think of it. But I look at myself as a guest. I don't want to go there and change them or fix them or tell them what they should do. And some of these systems that are being implemented on top of them from whatever you want to call them, the globalists, the United Nations, you know, some sort of think tanks that say you need to go cashless or whatever, you know, these are ridiculous. What if on top of it being an external system that wasn't created by their own people and doesn't fit their needs, what if it's also a really bad idea? And this cashless thing is a terrible idea. All over the world, it's a terrible idea. And especially in Africa, Africa relies on and functions on those little bits of cash going back and forth. And even if somebody lives on a very basic sustenance type level, you know, that's how you buy your food and get around with whatever basic things you need. But, you know, obviously if some banker type system wants everything to go POS, I don't remember where I heard this, but they said, you know, even if you only charge a couple of percent, it only takes 30 transactions for them to have all the money. And that's obviously the nature of the game. And so we have the banksters that, you know, don't like the idea that these people can just trade back and forth with these little bits of made up fictional meaningless cash, but live their entire life with it, with those little bits of cash going back and forth, which, by the way, explains why they're in such horrible condition, because they don't supply the country with new stock of cash.
Yeah, cash isn't going to go away in Africa. And I'm totally with you about cash being a good thing. And I don't think they'll be able to make the world go cashless. I think whites everywhere will push back against that. I personally hate the idea as well. But I do want to just emphasize that here in Africa, the liberals and the globalists and the Jews have come and spoken to the blacks all over Africa with all these big ideas, big globalist ideas. But all these things are failures, and they're not going to work. And there's tons of stuff that they've tried in Africa, everything, peacekeeping and all that kind of stuff. None of these things are going to work. And I love it. I love it because it means that the liberals will not be able to control Africa. Africa's basically a wild west.
You
And
know, I agree with you, Jan, 100% on that. And maybe that lack of trust or low trust society can actually benefit them in this sense. And just take the vaccine, the lowest vaccinated, COVID vaccinated, quote vaccinated. We know it's not a real, actually a vaccine. It's a bioweapon, but the lowest vaccination rates in the world are Central Africa and Saharan African countries. So imagine, you know, we have some people that are ostensibly low IQ, but they're very smart when it comes to not taking poison into their veins.
it was more just an accident of inefficiency. Inefficiency was the issue. In South Africa, you should have seen our government wanted to roll out vaccinations, and they got everything ready. And you must know South Africa, okay, is like seriously rich compared to those other countries you've been to. So we've got big money. We are like America, okay? In African terms, South Africa is America, okay? So our government actually prepared to roll out vaccines and vaccinate people en masse. They were going to vaccinate all the blacks and everything. And I remember at the time when the first statistics came out of how many people they were managing to vaccinate every day, because they had vehicles and they had syringes and they were ready to go and they were starting and they were going to do this. I did a calculation, and at the time I laughed because it showed me that it would take them 22 years to vaccinate the whole black population of South Africa. And so you know, and the government's like, we're busy doing this, we're getting it done, it's rocking. Meanwhile, it's nothing, okay? Whereas you people can go and vaccinate like 100 million people in what, a few months and stuff, 6 months or something. I don't remember the numbers, but the efficiency of the Western world versus Africa is two different things. I'm sure you agree.
I'll take your word for
Well, Brant, any other thoughts that you've got there?
No, I would just keep, hammering the same point down the line. I will kind of wonder out loud right here. And Jan, I know that you've probably had this thought every day of your life since you were an adult. How long can the charade go on? How long are these non-white countries going to be propped up by outside money and outside influence to try to get them to conform to these norms that the population cannot conform to? And also, how long is the charade of the South African government, going to go along? What direction is this going to go in? And what advice can we give to people both in South Africa or in other parts of Western civilization that can either, help them make better decisions on where they're going to live or what they're going to invest in, or how to talk to other people? These are the types of things that pop up in my mind.
Yeah, Brent, the way that Africa works mostly, and Mike, you can probably tell me the things that you've seen, but take for example Nigeria. I've never been to Nigeria, but I've We've had lots of Nigerians in South Africa, and Nigeria fascinates me because it's the most populous country in Africa, and its population is about 200 million people. And you know, white Americans are approximately 200 million people as well. I don't know the exact number, but it's more or less the same. So I look at America and I say, well, there's 200 million whites, there's what, 40 million blacks, and you know, I don't know how many other million of the other races that are there, but basically America was built by 200 million whites, okay? And then I say, okay, so, you know, where is a place where there are 200 million blacks? And Nigeria is a case in point. And so they've got their freedom, they've got a country, they've probably got a country that's, and you can tell me what you think about this, Mike, but they've probably got a country that's got a better climate, a more friendly climate for humans than North America, because I mean, it gets very cold in parts of North America. You've got very dry places as well. The Nigerians probably got rain most days, etc. It's warm, it's wet, you know, you can grow anything. And they got tons of oil there. And most of Africa, Brandt, the way that most of Africa works is most of Africa actually functions with them selling minerals. That has become the main commodity that's keeping all of Africa alive. The blacks don't do farming on a big enough scale to be commercialized. They've already fallen behind on their farming. That's why they're getting wheat from Russia and Ukraine. And most of Africa functions simply by selling the minerals in the ground. Western companies come here, mining companies come here, they mine, and the mining provides the main force for the entire economy, and that is what drives it. In the case of Nigeria, they've got oil, and the oil is so much. I actually published an article the other day that, do you know that they say that the theft, listen to the theft in Nigeria. In Nigeria, they steal 200,000 barrels of oil every day. Every day. That's how much is stolen. And it's run by, I think, Shell. I think Shell Oil and British Petroleum. I think they are the main, I think they are the main ones in Nigeria. So they are busy getting the oil out of Nigeria, but there's tons and tons of oil just disappearing. And I saw a report where they were now saying, a report in the West where they were saying they think that this theft of oil is not just, you know, it's not just a bunch of bandits. They think it's actually organized and orchestrated. And, you know, like the politicians and their supporters are all in on this, okay? This comes back to some of those concepts that Mike was talking about do the black African leaders care about their own people? In a minor way, they do, but in reality, they don't really care too much. And if they need to shoot their own people, they have no problem. They really don't have a problem. But Brandt, the thing that's keeping Africa going is the Western world and some Asian countries, including China, buying the minerals from Africa. And those minerals, that provides the industrial infrastructure, that provides the foreign currency, and that basically drives the main cities. That's how come there are like a couple of cities in the different African countries. So you'll always be able to find like a capital city that's got pretty decent hotels and things, and the rich can go to those places, but 95% of the country is rural and it's a mess. I don't know how you found it, Mike.
You know, you said something that I want to point out, just an observation I made. The weather is very conducive to survival without a lot of effort. And just not knowing too much about this subject, but just an observation, just looking out. I went to several areas, so you know, I got to see different sides of country. It's a very big country. It looks to me like the most fertile land I've ever seen in my life anywhere in the world. It's absolutely incredible. The soil looks rich. It's green. Yes, the cities, you know, especially, of course, Lagos is a massive city, but you just go, the plane goes 10, 15 minutes out and you're in this lush green land with little villages and stuff. And I'm, of course, this is the river deltas and everything, but also that I'm talking about on the other side of the country. But I think that you're right about how the structure really works. I don't know what the cut is for the different governments from oil and gas and other extractive industries, but you know, whatever they're receiving is a gigantic flow of money. And a lot of times people don't think in those terms, but imagine a monthly check, you know, if you will, for say billions of dollars or whatever, right? Coming in every month. Well, that allows that whoever controls that government and whoever controls that checkbook to, first of all, number one, because this is what they do, is enrich themselves. And then number two, keep power. So whoever takes over a lot of these countries, I'm not just specifically saying Nigeria, but whoever takes over, wins an election, whatever the case may be, now has access to this massive revenue that's coming into the government, and then implements whatever methods or multiple methods of corruption to put as much of it into their pockets and their friends' pockets as possible, and to keep power. So it's just a continuous system that has no where they don't have interest, like we were talking about. Do they really have interest in fixing, you know, with this money that comes in, do they want to fix roads or do they want to come up with solutions to whatever problems they think they have? No, you know, they just carry on with corruption.
That's very interesting. You hit an important point there when you say keeping power. People outside, white people in other places, don't understand the importance of power, and that these blacks, they are the blacks who've come and who are ruling and who are in control. For them, power is everything, everything. You have no idea how important it is. And if their power is threatened, they will start killing people quickly. It's quick. They don't muck around. People don't grasp it. Their society is different, and they're here in South Africa. There's a Christian, Dr. Peter Hammond, and Dr. Peter Hammond is a South African who grew up in Rhodesia, and Peter Hammond has traveled a lot across Africa because he's a Christian missionary. But Peter Hammond has made some interesting observations. One observation of Peter Hammond that you can write down, that you can carve in stone, is that the purpose of the army in Africa is to shoot the people. It's there to keep the people under control. It's not there to defend the country. They're not going to fight. The countries aren't going to fight each other. And if they do, it's not going to amount to a hill of beans. The purpose of the army is to shoot the civilians if the civilians are a problem. And that's not a joke.
Yes. And may I add one thing that I just thought of? You know, these idiot globalists that are trying to take over Western cities and implement something called a 15-minute city, where, you know, you get your little credits and you're allowed to eat this much meat this week, and, you know, everything's within 15 minutes, your little plant shakes and, you know, whatever their vision of Western society is. They should all go visit just pick any small African dictatorship and go to the city, and you'll figure out what a 15-minute city is. Because if you try to go out on any of the roads leaving the city, you've got to pass through a military checkpoint. So there's your 15. That's what a 15-minute city is. It's a mini dictatorship, except in the Western case with electronic, what they want, it doesn't exist yet, but with electronic controlled gates that, you know, you can't beep your little phone and get on this train to go outside because that's too much carbon that you used or what have you. But if you want to see a low tech version of it, go to a small African dictatorship, and then they'll understand what they're really pushing for. And some are aware and some are not aware what they're really advocating for.
You make an interesting point about these globalists and all their weird, stupid shit that they're busy trying in the Western world. I often just look at this stuff and I just laugh, because I think these people are lunatics. And first of all, their stupid ideas are not needed. White people can look after themselves quite fine, and whites know what they want, and whites will go and get what they want. I mean, I've looked at many, many things that happen in America. For example, I did a video about business, and in that video, I was looking at John Deere, and John Deere trying to control the farmers, and how the American farmers started fighting back against John Deere. And white Americans don't take shit, and they go off. Some people go to their state senator, and other people kick up a fuss and so forth. And you can see that, and there are many examples of this, where you can see Americans that when white Americans face a problem, they know, okay, I must do this, I must do that. They can think for themselves, they can act on stuff. And that is what American democracy and Western democracy really is about, and Western freedom is, you like to think for yourself, you want to do something, and you want to get your little bit of stuff done, and you don't like it if somebody gets in your way and irritates you. And trust me, I'm the same. But go to Africa, and you'll see that the people are half asleep. They don't really care that much. And, you know, the only people that are really excited are the people at the top. And they just talk a bunch of shit because they get big amounts of money from elsewhere. They want money for themselves. And you must see how they live. If you see how wealthy black leaders in Africa are, you'll be stunned that some of them are probably richer than American leaders.
I've seen some pictures of some of the palaces of some African leaders. Yeah, it's gigantic. It's just years and years and millions of dollars in corruption all put into one property.
Yeah, you will find blacks with incredible stuff. I had a there was a white guy who was a plumber that I was talking to some years ago, and the plumber told me that he's done some work for some black politicians. And he said to me, he said, like, they wanted like gold taps in their bathroom and stuff like that. And I'm like, whoa, you know, and the kind of stuff that he was coming up with, you know, gold, maybe it was just gold plated or whatever, but he was coming up, he was telling me a whole bunch of stories. I can't remember all the stuff, but yeah, you know, People don't know how Africa really works. And you know what? Africa's structure is Africa's structure. And my own view is that we made the blacks functional because we went and we forced the blacks to work like us. But now that I've looked at it and I've seen the end result and I'm more interested in white society, My advice is leave all the other races alone. Leave them all alone. If some of them want to chop each other's heads off, let them do it. If Muslims say that, you know, a thief must have his hands chopped off, and they go and they cut his hands off, don't moan and groan about it. And don't get involved in any of their business. Leave all their business to themselves. Because you'll find anyway that they're dysfunctional and they'll argue amongst each other and then they'll start fighting more and more. Just leave them alone. Just don't go and mess with it. And all liberal and globalist attempts of doing stuff in Africa is a failure, from what I can see.
You know, Jan, I think what you said right there, I agree 100%, leave them alone. But I think the reality is the normal people, you and I, the average citizens, we're all in favor of leaving them alone. It's our traitorous rulers and those with these capitalist designs that do not leave others alone because they have something to gain by going and messing with other countries, setting up businesses in other countries, making other countries indebted to them, or invading other countries to claim their resources or to depose a ruler, to set up businesses or whatever. So I think that a subtext of everything that we're talking about here is this huge delineation between the so-called leaders or rulers and us, the normal people. And at a certain point in time, we're going to have to deal with all of these bastards that are at the tops of our countries, because they're the ones that are steering us in the wrong direction constantly.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you that all the problems that whites have is top down, period. Everything is top down. It comes from the rich and from the politicians that have been bought by them, period. No question about it. No question about it. If we went and did things our way, you know, I sit and think about like Roman democracy, because that is basically what America is. And I look at this concept, and it's also what Hitler was doing even. And I look at this and I say to myself, you know, what would Roman democracy in the modern age actually be like if white people really had political power over their stuff? I tell you, all this liberalism would be out the window. Things would be sorted out quick, and people would be much happier. And I don't see that it would in any way be negative for us. I think all of us, we'd have a ball. That's what I think. Mike, I wanted to also ask you if you want to move on and tell any other stories. And Brent, is there anything else that you want to discuss there?
Well, let me say one thing before we hear more from Mike, because I want to hear more from him. But what you just said right there, like if we had a modern Roman democracy, that reminds me of the graph from, I think it started in the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And the voting patterns are broken down in the United States based upon white versus non-white and man versus woman. And if it's just white men voting, it's almost entirely Republican. It's the Roman Empire once again. But because white men slowly over time have given away their power, they've given voting privileges to other people, to where now the white men have been swamped by people that vote against the interests of white men, which means maintaining the civilization that we built. We've lost that by voluntarily either because we allowed our leaders to do that, or our leaders and our judges just did that against our will. We have lost that power. So we don't have a functioning, you know, Pax Romana right now, where we're churning and burning and we're doing things to the top of our ability. That's been taken away from us at the moment. And I have no doubt that will be regained, but how and when it's going to happen and how many different places it's going to happen is still up in the air.
Well, the one thing I'll quickly add in there, because you've raised a very interesting issue, is I've been watching lots of these videos by these white women who are now starting to like give relationship advice to other men and other women, and I'm liking those new women. They are awesome. They're coming right, and I think that some of the repair is underway.
Cool.
Brent, you said something about maintaining our civilization and that we're not in charge of selecting our own rulers or leaders. I kind of agree with that. I think that there's a lot to that that could be a lot of side subjects. And of course, one of those is election fraud. or control of elections through electronic voting, which I call playing a video game, because there's no, you know, you go vote and you just have, you have no effect on the outcome. You're just going to get a sticker on your shirt that says I voted. But between what you pushed in the machine and what comes out, well, that's up to somebody else, not up to you and your other voters. But anyway, not to get on that side subject, but talking about maintaining civilization, we have a system of law, or we had a system of law in the United States that's kind of primarily based on common law, in my understanding, that really was colorblind. If you kill somebody or rob a store or, you know, commit some kind of violent crime, then, you know, pretty much doesn't matter your color, the police will go after you, arrest you, charge you. You know, if you're guilty, you get some sort of range of sentence that's, generally speaking, you know, some kind of range. It's this many years for this, this many years for that, et cetera, et cetera. But through the takeover of our DAs in cities, and my understanding is George Soros, who's Jewish, has directly funded specific DAs, and it's even in mainstream media that Soros funded DA so-and-so, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's other influences and other people involved in this, but just as an example, this set of DAs across the United States is breaking down our system of maintaining a civilization by ruining the cases against violent criminals and letting them go, shortening their sentences, dropping charges. There's also a movement among those same kind of left-wing people involved in the law to get rid of bail because they think it's racist to have bail.
So no way.
That's yes.
Great. That's insane.
We are not in direct control of our systems of maintaining civilization. And to be fair, I'm sure there's plenty of Black families that don't want criminals roving around their neighborhoods either. I mean, let's give the benefit of the doubt there, obviously, right? But we're not in control. Somebody else is in control. Someone else is, and I have two theories on motive, but someone else is ruining and breaking down and intentionally destroying case by case and crime by crime, police department by police department, our ability to police our own cities and maintain civilization, because there's criminals, right? We need an appropriate response. So this system of common law has been developed over thousands of years of West, as you say, Western kind, has thought through the issues and come up with what I consider the fairest system. But it's being destroyed. Just last week, I think it was, there was mention this news story. Let me give you my theory on the motive. What is the motive behind these Soros style DAs? I think it's two. I think one, it could be a property scheme. If certain people have desired goals for a neighborhood or a property or an area or a city and they want to redevelop it, I think that they intentionally don't prosecute crime. They allow the area to be so bad that everybody wants to leave, and eventually the value of the buildings and everything will collapse, and then obviously somebody will step in and take it at cents on the dollar and do whatever their plan was. And I think that's what's happening in San Francisco, by the way. In general, as a whole city, I think someone has some plans for it, and they want to literally make it as impossible as just impossible for everybody to stay open. There's feces on the streets, there's needles on the streets, and crime running rampant. And so what happens is, you know, businesses are leaving. I read last week that over 90% of small businesses in San Francisco have experienced some kind of crime against them in the last month. So that's rampant crime, and that's definitely not the people of San Francisco maintaining their civilization. I think the other motive is, besides this practical sort of property scheme or property crime, I guess, if you will, the other motive is just sheer hatred of our society and our system. And so if someone, a Soros type, who's stated verbal, has stated his life's goal is to destroy the United States, well, what better way to do it than turn our system up on its head and punish people that have done nothing wrong and use the legal system against them, and then let actual violent criminals run crazy, go do it again. So, and then I'll wrap this up by saying last week there was a very liberal, white, very young woman who was the CEO of some sort of leftard tech company in Baltimore that had stated policies like we will 50% hire woman of color and the other 50% not diverse, you know, whatever, meaning that she would refuse to hire white men, even though she was a white woman CEO. And she was at her condo in Baltimore. And I think the story went something like, you know, some career criminal that had raped and killed other people, that was a black man, was ringing the door saying he'd left his keys, and she let him into the condo. And then he basically went up to her apartment and killed her. So I don't know if there's more to it than that. Of course, we can't really know from, you know, from what the news says, but she's dead, you know? So, I mean, it's very sad that she is a victim of she's a victim of this style of DA that lets criminals back out, which that was the case here. And B, she's a victim of a life, a very young life of brainwashing. And, you know, if she wanted to hire whoever she wanted to, that's her right, as if she's the CEO. And, you know, maybe she should have focused on finding the best talent instead of this, you know, push for diversity. Maybe she should have had a man in her life that told her don't open the door to strangers or something like that. But, you know, but this is a tragic end to a young woman that, you know, needlessly was murdered by somebody that could have been in jail under a normal system. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think there's a whole lot of issues wrapped up in that one story right there. And the only other thing that I'll add on before I turn it over to Jan is that I think from looking over the past year, there's, you know, little posts on Gab every once in a while who keep, you know, companies that keep track of this, how many whites are murdered by blacks every month in the United States. It's usually like somewhere between like 26 to 40 white people are just outright murdered by blacks in the United States. And it's never on the national news. You never hear about it because it's always suppressed. And that's part of this campaign that Mike is talking about to destroy Western civilization. And the one other little trick that the DAs use now is that they'll say that blacks are not mentally, they're not capable of understanding what they did, you know, because their IQ is too low, or they're insane, or there's some other mental excuse why they cannot be held accountable for murdering a white child or murdering a woman or something like that. Yeah, there's been a few cases of that over the past year. The 20-something black guy that went into a white people's house, and there were two white twins, two boys that were sleeping. They're about 4 years old. He picked up one, took him outside, murdered him. They found the body in the ditch, and then he returned to grab the other twin when they caught him. And he was not held liable for murder because they said he's mentally incompetent. That's the term. So all of these different things, they're just excuses for continuously attacking and destroying white society.
Well,
let me tell you that they know exactly what they're doing. They are white serial killers in South Africa who have openly boasted about who they killed and why they killed them. And I've got stuff where they said that they killed whites because they were white. But what is really interesting about your society, guys, is that I watch how. Just watch the hypocrisy. Just watch the Jew liberal hypocrisy at work. How they use things to benefit blacks in America, and they make hypocritical arguments. And in Africa, they would make the opposite argument. They would, you know, a very simple example is here in Africa. You know, the argument by Jews and liberals was, oh, blacks are the majority. Blacks are the majority. That's why they need to rule the country, the majority. But look in America and look at the civil rights movement and all that stuff, and it's all about minorities. Oh, no, these are minorities. We need to protect these minorities. But what about the white majority, you know? But if you look at it, just watch how tactical the Jews and liberals are, that in your society they'll use an argument that would never fly in Africa. And just final quote.
Go ahead.
Because there's so much to talk about. But final thing about that liberal woman who was murdered, that is so disgusting. But I want to tell you the sad fact is that there are lots and lots and lots of white women, children, who are still going to die. This will carry on endlessly until people can't take it anymore. Okay, Brent.
Yeah, that's the bad thing. It is going to continue. When you were saying that in South Africa, Jews have argued for the majority rule. Okay, well, the blacks are in the majority. The majority's black. They should be ruling, right? Yay. Okay. Over in the United States, oh, the poor minorities, they're downtrodden. So we should let the minorities rule. Give them their chance now. They've been repressed and oppressed, et cetera. And it seems like the Jews who are in power are hypocritical, but if you understand it, if you look at it from the whole anti-white perspective, they're not being hypocritical, because what they really want is to destroy Western civilization and deprive white people of having an identity. Because they think the thing that they are most concerned with, if they're telling the truth, is white people having an identity. Because if white people have an identity, they can turn around and look at the Jewish presence and say, okay, why are you here and why have you been doing these things to us? Why have you been brainwashing us and indoctrinating our people? Why have you taken over control of our governments and media and institutions? We don't want to put up with that anymore. So that's where they go back to the Holocaust and all these other stories about, oh my God, it's so horrible how horribly we've been treated. No one's been treated as horribly as we have in the history of the planet. So they use this as leverage over whites. So anything, all the things that we've talked about so far today, is just different ways, different avenues of attack to tear down that white identity, tear down that white civilization. So whites don't even stand up and defend themselves, which by necessity would mean addressing the Jewish control issue that they have over our societies. So
that's a great point.
Brilliantly said, Brent. Brilliantly said.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would like to throw a little more blame now, not just liberals, but the so-called conservative media that a lot of people consume. Like, for example, I found this story about this white woman on Gateway Pundit, which is probably one of the biggest, more right-wing websites. But I want to point out that sites like this, they just give whites a mini outrage outlet. And then if you read all the comments, this story, for example, like probably has 1,000 comments. They're just stuff like, ah, she got what was coming to her. And I don't think that's productive. Yes, she was, affected by these terrible, awful, just horrifying liberal beliefs. But, if I had written the story, I would have said, hey, what a sad loss. Instead of blaming her for being a liberal, I would have said, look, here are the alternates. If she was intelligent enough to be the CEO of a company, maybe she was good enough to also be a good wife to somebody. Maybe she could have had wonderful kids. Maybe she could have been guided by somebody that's a little bit smarter to her. Hey, stay away from those beliefs. They're dangerous. Or, like I said before, don't open the door to a stranger and get murdered by somebody your liberal DA let out of jail. But we just have a mini outrage outlet, but we don't have a real conversation on the right as to solutions and as to re you know rejecting this stuff. You kind of said something kind of inspirational there, Brent.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's a good point. This so-called conservatism, especially in the United States, and I think it's exactly the same way in England, it's to redirect the rage that starts to build up inside of white people when they realize how they've been treated and how our countries have been taken over by people that hate us. You know, they'll throw out the conservative politician or conservative media and say, okay, look at this right here. Look at this story. We're going to talk about this. Isn't this outrageous? Aren't you angry? Yeah. Okay. Let's put our comments in here. Okay. Now let's talk about sports ball. Let's talk about the football game that's coming up. Yeah. All right. You know, and then you cheer for this nonsense. So it's constantly taking this energy that we could have that could be productive and just pissing it away, redirecting it so nothing ever comes of it. I think slowly people, both in England and in the States, are starting to realize that, wait a second, these conservatives, they don't give a shit about us either. They're not doing anything. They're part of this act. They just pretend like, oh, come here, you know, we'll hug you and make it all better. But they're not. And they continue to pander more to non-whites. They keep the border just as open as the Democrats have kept open. They don't do a damn thing. And I don't know how long this is going to develop to get enough members of Western kind to realize that, look, we have to look out for ourselves now. We have to start taking care of things. We have to not be so naive. We can't be childlike. We can't be distracted by all this bullshit anymore because no one is coming to save us. No one is. The people who should have been responsible, the people that should have been looking out for us, they've already turned their backs on us. They don't give a shit. They're living the high life. They're in their gated communities. They have power. They have all these little things that they want. You know, just like the corrupt blacks, we've got the corrupt whites, and you have the Jews, of course, that are playing their part. So we have to take care of these things for ourselves. And like with the Gateway Pundit and these other avenues of media or these sources of media, I don't even pay attention to any of that stuff anymore. To me, that's just a complete waste of time. I don't give a rat's ass. I just work on productive things with the website for our kids. And I kind of just put blinders on because there's so much misdirection. There's so many distractions and just bullshit, just nonstop bullshit and information, which is useless, that it's easy to get distracted. So I'm kind of going on a rant here, but I despise.
I'm going to follow up.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, you know, that argument there, she got what was coming to her. You know what it was? Another thing that I saw here in South Africa was in the days when I was still talking to my Jewish friends, then, you can see things are bad. You can see crime is going up. You can see all kinds of things happening. You know what I saw the Jews doing? The Jews would come and then they'd spread some kind of little joke or cartoon. And then they just laugh about the thing. So instead of the people getting angry, hey, the crime's going up, the government's not doing its thing, people are dying, this and that thing is breaking, then the Jew comes along and he says to you, oh, here's a little joke, you know, let's laugh about this. And also kind of partly defusing the thing in that way. But I'm totally with you about this issue about that argument that the woman got what was coming to her. I've noticed a lot of Americans having that kind of attitude, and it's wrong. You know, I've started thinking that, and this is where I've done a lot of deep thinking, even years ago, about whites and fixing whites. And my thinking has been that there are whites who say, oh, no, we must kick those other whites out, kick them out. No, you don't understand. They are our DNA. They are us. And if you chase other whites out, let's say we chased some of our whites out here in South Africa into a black community, and we leave them there with that black community, then those whites are now gone from us. And we should actually be doing the complete opposite. We should be letting people come back, even if those people have not even if those people have done stupid things and anti-white things, just first work on their minds. Because if you look at what Hitler was doing, Hitler was educating people. The more I've looked at everything Hitler was doing, even when he was talking to his generals, even when he had conferences, even when he had meetings, I can see that all Hitler was doing was he was constantly trying to educate people. He was trying to take the Germans and say to them, listen, you've got to understand this, you've got to understand that. That he's trying to change their, he's trying to make them understand a whole bunch of realities because it's necessary. And that's also where that quote, where I came across that quote where he said he needs 30 years to fix the German people because whites aren't ready. There are so many things that we've got that we're not thinking racially. We must think racially. These people are part of us and we mustn't just let people go to hell in a handbasket. And we must take the time and make the effort to fix their minds. That woman died because her mind was buggered. Her mind was buggered through liberals and Jews. That's why she died. And it's a case of bringing people back. And I've been so pleased to see among the youth, the white youth, that when the youth are taught, the youth become racialist and racist and Nazi, and they're cool. The kids are cool. And now I'm seeing the same thing slowly starting among white women, where white women are talking. I've heard white women. I even heard a white woman saying that women shouldn't have the vote. She said women shouldn't have the vote. And there's a bunch of stuff where younger white women are saying, you know what? Men can do this thing better than us. There was another brilliant argument that I heard where a white woman was saying, she said, okay, she was arguing with a liberal woman and she was saying, okay, so you say you want equality for us, okay? But why aren't women doing the nastiest jobs? And then she went and she pulled out the numbers of men who work in sewerage, plumbing, all the different kinds of hard work, physical hard work. And she said, you know, women want equality, so why aren't women doing those jobs as well? Those jobs are dominated, and she reads off the figures, you know, this job is done 99% by men, 95% by men, you know, 97% by men. And so there are women that are now starting to think, and they're starting to realize, hey, you know, there are things that we need. And I've heard some very interesting arguments. I must tell you, I'm absolutely convinced that saving our race, the most critical thing to do is educate everybody. And there are two things that we need. We need a racial education, like Hitler gave his people, so that the kids, when the kids grow up, you say to them, hey, that's a black. This is how blacks are. That's a Jew. And this is what you need to know about Jews, okay? And you know, get to know, you need a racial education. And you know what else you need is for politics and for a true democracy, you need a political education. You need a political education. You need to teach the kids and all whites, hey, this is politics. This is how it works. These people do this, those people do that, those people are busy using those people, et cetera, et cetera. If we can just educate whites racially and politically, that will already start totally changing their mindsets. And the rest of the stuff will fall into place much more easily. And white men will be able to much more easily enter back and start physically taking control of the things they need to take control of. That's my rant. And final part of the rant is, I agree with you on the conservatives. They're worthless. They are weak. And the one thing I hated about Donald Trump and the GOP was sucking in all the freaking non-whites. I thought that was a dumbass thing to do. But anyway, that's where things stand. So we have got ourselves so so off topic with all these excellent comments. You guys can say whatever you want, and then when Mike is ready, move on to the next African thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike, if you'd like.
Well, any questions that come to you guys' mind?
Nothing particular at this point. I think tell us about some more of your adventures. I do have some other comments about lush, beautiful Africa, but I think fire away on another one of your adventures.
Some of the other interesting things that I noticed in different places in West Africa was the presence of Lebanese and other Middle Eastern families and companies. I thought it was pretty fascinating, but everywhere I went, there were Lebanese or other, you know, other Middle Eastern sort of traders, construction companies. You know, if I went to like whatever the high-end mall of the town was, there were plenty of Middle Eastern folks walking around, and I hadn't noticed that before anywhere else. Maybe I didn't notice, or maybe it's more people have moved, but I see that certain people look at whatever African country they've chosen. I think they see an economic opportunity, and they feel safe, and they feel like they can move there, and they were. Plenty of families. That was a new observation for me. So I thought, well, that's definitely a trend that will probably continue.
That's very interesting. The non-whites and the blacks are themselves an issue, but I still say to you that the people who worked the best with the blacks were the whites. But it's interesting, you know, because there is a Muslim influence in Africa, and Muslims have been working to conquer parts of Africa. So not surprising, interesting.
Mike, would you want to live in an African country for an extended period of time?
That's a great question. Probably not. However, there are lots of, let's call them thinking or aware people in the West that with very, very different outcomes and different types of perspectives are trying to leave the West. And a lot of them sense sort of this encroaching totalitarianism. And there's no real agreement amongst these people who, you know, have this idea that they want to escape. But there are moments that you're in a place outside the United States that you kind of feel, oh, there's nobody, you know, that's policing my speech, or, you know, there's nobody here that would, you know, ban me for making a comment or, you know, something like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit because they obviously have that. If you say something against their leaders, then that's a different culture. That's a different thing. But things are simpler in some third world countries. And so there's a little bit of an attractive quality to that, because we've gotten so complex with all these abstractions and complexities that we have to deal with. So I guess I'm answering it by saying there are qualities about different places that seem okay. Now, there's some countries I've been to, I said, no, I don't even want to go back, not for a second. And then there's other places I say, I could visit this area again if I was sent again by my company or something like that. And then there's areas that I thought, huh, that looks interesting over there. Maybe that, you know, there's a little resort town down there that, you know, that have some Western people living in or whatever. But I don't think I would want to live in West Africa anywhere that I've seen. But I wouldn't write it off completely, just because there could be situations that, you know, it could work. Maybe for somebody else faster than me, but I do see. Sorry for kind of rambling around, but you know, there's just sort of, I just really would say there's sort of qualities to less complexity sometimes. But I've never been to South Africa, so I don't know what the, you know, white communities are like there, or, you know, how much more appealing that might be to me or to other Westerners.
That's
a good answer.
Very interesting. Yeah, the thing that you'll find though is that when you're in those other societies, you are subject to their rules and regulations. But one thing that I find sad about your answer is that you say all the complexities and the things in modern life. But when I look at a lot of it, to me it seems to be liberal and Jew induced, and that, you know, like this thing of policing your speech. If America today was, you know, the same as when America was white, you know, if America today was America of 120 years ago in terms of culture, I don't see any reason why, you know, there'd be 110 things that would be gone. You wouldn't have to bother with it, you know.
Right. And to be fair, what I just said would never have been said. And the people that I was referring to, this sort of community of, you know, escape the West types that kind of have the wrong answer, and they have no agreement among themselves. You know, there's people saying, oh, you should move to Asia, you should move here, you should move there, you should move to an island. You know, at the end of the day, they're going to become a guest in whatever country they thought that was smart to escape to, and they are going to be different from the people that they've gone around. You know, I have a friend that tells me, he says, there's no, and I agree with him, he says, there's nowhere to bug out to, we just bug in. He says, you know, just be around people that we know and people that we like, and not try to escape to some, you know, some other place. And I've also traveled much more extensively in the Americas than in Africa. And there isn't anywhere in Central or South America that I would even remotely consider living in, other than Southern Brazil, Uruguay, and Argentina. And if you want to guess why that's the answer, go ahead. But
we know. I know.
You know. So. But and look, that's fine. There may be some qualities in some of these other places that you know, that are great for the people there, or they've I don't know, you know. And then there's Americans that think that living in Mexico is great. I disagree. I don't have any ill will toward Mexico whatsoever, but I would never ever live there. I'm not comfortable there. You know, more than a few days for a business trip or something like that. But I just don't have the desire to uproot myself and then be among a strange people to me. And that's nothing against them. It's just what I want.
Yeah, very interesting.
Okay, Yon, you got to say something smart now.
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. You know, the thing that I try to tell people is that what if everybody runs away? What if everyone runs away? Because that's how the liberals and even the Jews here in South Africa were, you know, people that I knew, they used to talk like that. And if everybody runs away, then what happens? Then it means that the lowest garbage get to control the country. And that is why I am so against white men abandoning things. And in the case of like South Africa, it is, believe it or not, even though we're not a big population, You would actually be amazed how difficult it is to move large numbers of people unless you have a government that can sponsor it and send ships, and people start loading their stuff onto ships and you send it off. You would not be able to move hundreds of thousands or millions of people easily. So most movement is going to be done on a person-by-person basis. But I am absolutely of the mindset that white men must fight and defend every inch of the Western world. And in that regard, I even regard South Africa as part of that. I say, don't give up anything. And I've done some videos. I don't know if you guys have seen some of my newer videos, like the one about why white men have lost wars since World War II, etc. But I'm going to be bringing out lots more military stuff, because the only answer that I see at the end of the day is that white men are going to have to gather together, going to have to do like in ancient times, going to have to start forming groups and units. And it's probably going to start out by fighting crime. But ultimately, eventually, as things get worse and worse, white men are going to have to take over chunks of countries and eventually whole countries. I don't see any other alternative, and I think it's good. I think we've all become too soft, and we've all become very weak in the head, and all this time of just living a liberal life and just, you know, you just get up and you watch TV, you read the newspaper, you go to work, come back, watch TV, read the newspaper, go back to work. No, that's not good enough, because while you were doing all those things, there were other scumbags who took over politics, who took over business, who totally fucked up your country. That happened in South Africa, and that's now happened everywhere else. And that, you know, if you want to survive, you have to create your own society and look after your own society. And if men are not interested in doing those things, then we are going to die. But my own analysis is that it's well within our capability, well within our capability to get everything back. And we should be the boss. You know, I truly want to see a freaking Roman Empire, legions. I want to see legions freaking conquering again. Just the legions might be coming with artillery and drones and stuff, but I want to see the legions conquering. and Africa, I look at these black Africans, I just laugh at them. They can be crushed to pieces if you see how strong we used to be.
Right. That brings up a couple, or one point and one question in my mind. I officially do not advocate one way or another about how Western kind is supposed to regain its civilization, control of its civilization, control of its territories again. The way I look at it is that'll be up to most likely future generations. And once Western kind has an identity once again, once they figure out who they are, they pull their heads out of their butt collectively, they're going to be able to do whatever they want to do to regain control of their civilizations. Maybe that will be peaceful. Maybe that will be hostile. I just don't know. But to me, that's a little ways out there. So I don't talk about that. Like, we got to pick up our guns and do this and that. I mean, if that actually happened, then yeah, there's plenty of people who would finally activate themselves. They'd get off their asses and do that. And other thing, a question that popped into my mind, Jan, is do you think there's any route in South Africa to where the non-whites would ever acknowledge that, you know what, we don't really know what we're doing, and we've taken this country from the rule of the white South Africans in 1994, and we've just run it into the ground. We've just destroyed it, and we don't, for whatever reason, we don't have the competence to do that. Would you, Boers in English, would you start taking over control of the government again? Do you think there's any route for that? Or is it just going to be the Boers are going to have to wake up at a certain point and get enough of them together to say, look, now we've got to start expanding some territory. Now we're going to make a bigger Orania for ourselves.
You know, you ask some excellent questions. You raise very interesting issues. In theory, these things are possible. But in history, I don't see any examples of these things. Ultimately, power is always fought over, and nobody gives up power. And even if the vast majority of the blacks were to believe, and make no mistake, I think that there are quite a lot of blacks who have looked at and even openly said, if not privately to other blacks, where they've gone and they've said to others, you know, it was better under white rule or this or that. And there are many indicators that blacks can see things are getting worse or that they're experiencing more problems. But ultimately, you know, you've got black society is ruled by their elite, whoever it is at the current point in time, their rich, their politicians, their whatever. Previously, by the way, the blacks had chiefs. When I grew up, blacks had all black tribes had chiefs and kraal leaders, a kraal head. And so that is their aristocracy. That's their ancient aristocracy that we defeated. Okay. But since then, their quotes aristocracy has lost power in the same way that our kings and queens have lost power. And nowadays, they are ruled by politicians and the wealthy. And also military guys. So you see these coup d'etats in Africa and so forth. In theory, blacks could do it, but I think that the blacks at the top, the higher you go, I think that why would the people at the top want to hand over to the Boers? There are many reasons why they wouldn't, eh? Because firstly, they're rich and their lives are good. So what do they care if other people are suffering? They are happy, okay? So the unhappiness may be at the lower level, and the lower level are like, oh, we don't have food, we don't get houses, etc. What do the people at the top care? They got plenty of food, plenty of houses. Hey, you should see, like in this time when we had COVID and stuff, there was a time where they stopped the sales of liquor. And meanwhile, government ministers were selling liquor, okay, privately and making a ton of money. They made the law that you can't sell liquor, and then they sell liquor, and they also they don't get caught. The whole thing, these things happen all over Africa, okay, They've learned. I must tell you, the Jews taught them well. The Jews taught them, hey, you just make the law so that it works for you, man. And it's that simple. So I don't see the ones who have the power wanting to do that. And even the other ones who are not quite at the higher rungs of power, they are now bank managers, and they got degrees and stuff. And why would they want to go back to white rule? The blacks actually have indicated that they are afraid of white rule because they think it's going to be back to apartheid. So meaning that we're going to toss them back into townships and make and give them picks and shovels and tell them, hey, you got to go dig up the road again. So for them, white rule is a nightmare. I don't see that happening. I don't see that ever happening. The most likely scenario that people have been trying, Jews and the very wealthy, Jews and the extremely wealthy Jews and extremely wealthy whites, have been trying very hard to try to create black liberals and black weaklings and then get all the other blacks to vote for them so that they then have somebody that they can control. That is also not working out well. My prediction is that you will see that, as in all societies, you will see that the strong will come to the fore. And in South Africa, the strong are, they are actually communist. They have genuine communist leanings. And when I say communist, they may not know of a way to make society function economically in a communist way. But what they do know is they know they must fight. They know that. They were taught that. And they will fight. And they are ruthless. And so I don't see any outcome except that eventually it's got to come to some kind of fight. And that the whites, the bad news for the whites is the whites are, oh, no, we voted and we're in the society and blah, 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 and now we don't have any rights and they're doing what they want to do. Well, the only time it's going to change is when eventually enough whites stand together and we say, hey, we are going to fight their guys. And that to me is the only thing I see. Unless the West and Europe can put enough pressure on the blacks and put enough pressure on the blacks so that the blacks change more of their politics. The one thing that all the blacks are struggling with is economics. And like, I think 40% of our trade comes from Europe, actually. And do you know that we've got European factories in South Africa? We build cars for Europe and stuff like that. So I think that the only thing that softens the blow for the whites in South Africa is the economic and diplomatic power of America and Europe over the blacks, because the blacks will get sanctions and they'll be unable to trade and sell to the West. That is the greatest power that seems to be having some kind of influence over them. But I really, you know, these things can carry on fumbling and bumbling like this for decades. I personally would like to see us starting to build our own things. I think that's the only thing we can do.
That's a good answer. Yeah, I think that foreign policy of Western civilization governments putting pressure on the black-controlled government would be one way of doing it. It'd be like the opposite of what happened with Rhodesia in South Africa in the past. But we have to get control of our own governments first before our governments can help you guys in South Africa. So we're all dealing with our own issues right now, unfortunately.
Dead on. I've looked at that, because if you Americans can't get control of your politics, then we're all screwed. Okay.
Yeah.
Because if we can't get more Trump types and anything that stirs the pot there in America, then what it means, because the thing that scares me, I'll tell you what scares me the most is, the thing that scares me the most is America coming to kill the Boers. That scares me. I'm much more afraid of America coming to kill us than China or anyone else. Anyone else, we can take them on, but I'm just worried that America goes crazy. However, I do like the way that America is becoming more chaotic, and maybe you know, we could still slip out through that way. Jury has got the Western world in quite a grip here, eh? But yeah, America is the heart and soul of the thing, because you're the strongest country in the West. You are the rulers of the West, basically, and you set the scene for the whole of the West. So it's not like we've got an independent France, an independent Germany. America's still got tremendous amounts of power. And I hate what I see at the top. But yeah, I just want to touch on some other things from Mike, where Mike was saying that as he was flying over Africa, it's lush, it's beautiful, And it's like you can plant anything anywhere. It looks, yes, Mike. The large part of Africa is like that. From south of the Sahara right up to here in South Africa, it actually only starts getting dry here in South Africa. Up to South Africa and a little bit north of South Africa, from there onwards, all of Africa is just freaking lush, man, and it's beautiful. When I flew to Holland, and in 2003, I was using the plane's flying speed and the wing, and I was trying to measure distances on the ground. And because we were flying across Central Africa in the daytime, and I was trying, and I saw these big rivers, and I began to get curious, how wide are these rivers? And using my schoolboy mathematics and the wing and a timer, I calculated that there were lots and lots of rivers that were 8 to 10 kilometers wide. And there's so much freaking hydroelectric power in Africa. You could power all of Africa with nothing but hydroelectricity. You just got to build a bunch of dams. You'll have dams that are the size of small seas and things like that. It's insane what is sitting in Africa. And whites who've lived here and whites who looked at it could see the potential. They could see the potential. The only problem was we never had enough people. We were just far too few. Far too few. That's our big problem in Africa. I'm all for colonization too. We need to get a couple of million whites here. Then you'll see something totally different. And just another final point about Africa is that the future, going back to your question about the future, one thing I'm noticing about Africa is that Africa's falling behind. Africa falls more and more behind. And blacks are complaining. Blacks in other countries that were successful, they're complaining, like blacks in Kenya, which is East Africa. Britain used to say, oh, Kenya's doing so well. At one point, there was quite a big colony of whites in the north of Kenya. There were 60,000 whites in the north of Kenya. They were almost like on the point of creating like a viable colony that they could do their own thing with. Anyway, they were chased out in the late 50s. The blacks also came and murdered them, etc. But Kenya is, quotes, the British success story in Africa, and actually now it's a flop. The Kenyans have said that, the infrastructure needs maintenance. The white man did not create infrastructure that doesn't need maintenance. It's not good enough, and now the country is falling apart. So that's one of the beautiful things, is that lots of things are breaking, and I'm loving it. And the more it breaks, the better. I'm all for that.
You know, as those things break, which they are breaking, and that's a common theme in Africa, is whatever somebody else built is either being destroyed or falling apart or whatever, or just the system that it entails is not being used properly. Like, for example, if you build someone built a four-lane highway outside parts of Lagos, but what the local people there do is they drive down the wrong side of the road against oncoming traffic, weaving literally, because it's faster than going on their own side of the road. So if you're driving on the correct side of the road, you have cars, trucks, motorcycles driving down the dotted line, splitting the lanes, or just outright weaving completely in and out of wherever they see a hole. Because they think, well, that's smarter and faster. And I actually witnessed a front end head-on collision while I was riding in a taxi. So, I mean, it's just, I think someday there will be a moment of sense, and people might even be invited back to build communities and build colonies because of the positive influence that it would have. General, I mean, it's already exists anyway in a micro, in a very small way. You take any given industry, and I'm not going to mention my specific industry so I don't get canceled by my company. But if you take any given industry, there is a group of experts. You can take a wild guess as to where they came from, who are living in some small neighborhood somewhere and keeping everything together in almost any of these countries. So, you know, it's kind of on an invite by invite basis. There's just tiny numbers of foreigners, foreign to them, foreign to African countries, who are keeping things together, barely. But maybe one day they get tired of that and they say, no, we really want things to work. We really want to advance. And then they collaborate with people from outside of Africa in a different way that's ever been done before. I don't know. That's just kind of a crazy thought. But, I suppose it could happen.
Yeah, you are raising the issue again, which I've raised before, of how few whites it takes to fix things. And the same is true for South Africa, is that the only time things really break is when they get rid of all the whites, you know, that they've got to get rid of all the whites and everything. And then, because even if there's a handful of whites, they still have influence, they still have ability, and they guide the blacks. I myself know how those things work. So yeah, it's amazing. But the other side of the coin is, if you are malicious, you could pull the plug. You could pull the plug on those blacks easily, because what you're saying is that there are tiny communities, and those tiny white communities are making certain things run for those blacks. I'm sure all those ATMs and the mobile phones and all that infrastructure would not be working without a bunch of high IQ white technicians and engineers and stuff. So the other side of the coin is, all you need to do is get those whites and say, hey, let's switch this country off today, and you could switch that country off. And it would literally be the same as pulling out the plug. I think that which has its uses in the future, things like that might be useful. But on the whole, Africa is one thing I'm noticing about Africa is that the Western world is moving at such a pace, despite all the Jews and liberals. Europe and America are inventing and moving so fast with technology, all kinds of technology, that I can see
yes.
Black Africa keeps on falling behind. And that's awesome, because I'm telling you, colonialism too. we need to get,
and you know,
we need to seize some big fucking chunks of territory. It's
Jan,
it's not,
you know,
difficult.
You said something that sparked an idea for me, and since the theme of today is jumping subjects, I'll just jump to a different one. You said something about tiny white communities, and you know what I see happening in the United States. The unvaccinated women are completely aware of what's going on. They will loudly and firmly refuse to date any young man that took the COVID-19 vaccines. They want to have children. They want to establish homesteads. They want farm. They want land. And they know they're the future. And you know what? Maybe that's only a tiny number of people and a tiny community. Well, it's not that tiny, because you know we have a lot of people, but they're the future, and they're going to repopulate and recolonize our countries, and they're going to do it intentionally and knowing what they're doing. And I see great hope in them, in the younger people that refuse the vaccine, because it's not just the shot, it's more to them. And they've also kind of taken this opportunity to understand the world, if you will, a little bit better.
Very interesting. No, there are all kinds of thoughts that are popping up that I've seen spreading, and it's moving, and I like it. Man, We are actually running out of time, believe it or not, and we didn't even look at other things, but we will be back. And I just want to say a few things quickly that I wanted to mention about West Africa is that I was following the West East, the West versus Russia stuff in West Africa. And the whole issue there is that the French and Americans. I like the French because the French have got a position where they are able to move around and do a lot of stuff in Africa. And the French were also the greatest, were the whites who helped the rest of us the most. The French were awesome. Without the French, we would all have gone downhill totally. So they were great, but I'm happy to see the French operating in Africa, but now the blacks are chasing the French out and telling the French to stuff off, even though the French are doing more to assist them than anything else. And the French were even fighting Muslims, which again, I don't think whites should be wasting their time with stuff like that. If Muslims and Middle Easterners want to conquer blacks, I don't have a problem with that. Hey, if the Middle Easterners and Muslims want to invade some black countries and conquer them, hey, the blacks wanted their freedom. They wanted their countries. They must fight for it. They must fight for it like everybody else, like whites have always done. So, you know, I've always thought, you know, let the Muslims do their thing. So the key issue that I was watching that was very fascinating to me was there are a couple of countries. There's Niger and Mali and another one, Benin, I think. And they have had coup d'etats. Now, just to show you a few things about the blacks have got the African Union, which is like the European Union, okay? So, you know, in name, as with everything in Africa, in name it sounds great, okay? In practice, it's a whole other story. And the blacks had a rule that no coup d'etats were to be allowed, okay, in Africa. Everything's going to be democratic, okay? then in 2017 in Zimbabwe, in 2017, 2018 in Zimbabwe, I watched as Robert Mugabe, who I hate, was overthrown himself by a type of coup d'etat. And, you know, I was waiting like, what's the African Union going to do? And South Africa is like the leader of the thing at the time. And, you know, supposedly South Africa is going to have to declare war because there's been an illegal power change in Zimbabwe. And what did South Africa do? They just quietly let it be. Anyway, so now we've had coup d'etats up in West Africa, and they say that they are Wagner linked, and you'll even see some of those guys have visited Putin and they love Putin, etc. So and those countries are small, they are tiny, and they're backward, okay? But they've had a coup d'etat. Niger, for example, the total army of Niger is 10,000 men strong, okay? And by the way, the French had 1,500, a battalion of 1,500 troops in Niger, okay? And there was a whole standoff, and the blacks wanted to toss out the French army. And the funny thing is that people don't realize that I will bet you, I've looked at the French military and their stuff, and their stuff is high quality, yeah? And that they are equal to America on special forces type stuff. So the joke is that, you know, if the blacks of Niger want to throw the French out of Niger, the truth is those 1,500 French troops would probably chew up and destroy the entire Niger army in no time at all. Okay, they'll fuck them up. Okay, they've got armored vehicles and stuff. That they are good, man. So the joke is here are the French like, oh no, we're like negotiating and so forth. Meanwhile, the French can actually just smash the blacks into the ground, but they don't. Okay, anyhow, so then it was. Then America came along, and all of this is to illustrate the uselessness of liberalism, the uselessness of politics, the uselessness of negotiation, okay? So America and the West was starting to put pressure on West Africa. West Africa falls under has got a grouping called ECOWAS, and ECOWAS is like their economic arrangement for up in West Africa. And Mike, you know, you say Nigeria is huge, but there's lots and lots of countries there. I mean, that whole freaking territory is enormous. Okay, anyhow, so what happens is America now says to ECOWAS, led by Nigeria, 200 million strong, 200 million, and they say, okay, you need to then sort out this coup d'etat problem, because you know the Americans are putting pressure, because they're putting pressure on anything that's Russian. But the truth is now ECOWAS also supposed to be part of, you know, all these African organizations, and they're not allowed to, they're supposed to only be for democracy, okay? Anyway, so I was watching this thing because it looked like, yeah, they're like going to put some pressure on. The blacks have got to go to war, okay? And and I'm keen to see Nigeria go to war. Nigeria's got a population of 200 fucking million. I can't stop stressing that enough. That's a huge fucking population. Same population as white America. Whereas Niger's got like just a couple of million. It's just like a few million with like 10,000 troops, okay? And it looked for a little while like something was going to happen, like maybe Nigeria was going to, the Nigerian government was having all these official meetings, and there was talk that the army is going to send a convoy, and sounded like somebody was going to do some shooting. And then I noticed after a week or two, it's all been quietened down. The blacks have all stopped, and nobody's going to be shooting each other. And they're not going to fight, because I was looking forward to it, because I was thinking, you know, are the blacks going to actually shoot a couple of each other, and then I can do some videos and we can study their warfare, because their warfare is pathetic, okay? And and in the end, the blacks did nothing. And so Wagner wins, Russia wins, and they didn't even have to fire a fucking shot. And all they got are like these little black countries that are fucking desert, and they got nothing in them. But the blacks were willing to go and join the army, so the army would go from maybe 10,000 to 20,000. And so Nigeria backs down. This enormous superpower of a black nation like backs down. I was like looking at that. What a joke. What a joke. And you know, I wish that the America and the West would learn that you can't do diplomacy with these people. They'll do whatever the fuck they want. And you're busy talking, human rights and democracy and the rule of law. All that stuff has no meaning. Has no fucking meaning. So I just looked at it and just laughed it off.
You'd have to come up with some kind of giant bribery scheme to get enough Nigerian soldiers together to go do something in the neighboring country or something like that. It'd have to, you know, it'd have to have a giant carrot. You know, it just wouldn't work. I don't think you could order enough. You know, I don't think you could place enough orders for that to. You know, for them to accumulate into some sort of standing army and then go to the neighboring country. It doesn't function like that. You know, it functions on, you know, stealing little bits of paper from people passing by on the streets. And then, you know, occasionally they shape up and, you know, all stand in one area because some politician is going to go by or something like that. But, you know, the idea that they would create this sort of go fix a neighboring country. You're absolutely right. It's just sort of absurd.
Yeah. So you saw the Nigerians. they're not into any of that stuff. And the vast majority of blacks in Africa. There's not much that's going to happen. So guys, we've pretty much reached the end of our time. Are there any final comments? And then we can close down for today.
Well, I was hoping that we could share our meatloaf recipes, but I guess that's just going to have to wait till a different time.
I just want to let you to know I appreciate you very much and your ideas and sharing this today, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks very much, Mike, and we'll talk again, and we'll make a plan for another show, and I'm sure that we can touch base on some of the things that we didn't manage to get to this time. So thank you very much for your time, guys. Been awesome.
Thank you.
Right on.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.